friends, I'm DJ Lance Rock, and I have to say, Rock and Roll Grad School is awesome!
This is Rock and Roll Grad School with your hosts, Heidi Hedquist and Luke Poling. They're losing their edge, but they were there.
Hello, kiddies. We are going to have a real good time together. We're going to focus on the positive. And we have a lovely chat, if I do say so myself, with Rocky Lin about his new record and film about his life. You're just staring at me like you're waiting for me to say something incredibly embarrassing and stupid.
No, I'm not.
No. Kind of?
No.
Oh. So I missed it the other day when we were talking about this. The folks we were talking about were the inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the few that they bring in like after the fact as like, you know, their excuse to get folks in who didn't get in. Did you see this?
Mm-mm.
So Jimmy Buffett is getting in.
Okay, of course.
But most importantly, the MC5 are finally
nice.
Getting in. The fact that they dragged this out so long, Wayne Kramer, of all the members of the MC5, is not able to attend and feel appreciated for a incredible body of work.
Mm-hmm.
But at least they are in. At least you're completely within your right to walk into the Hall of Fame and you'll kick out the jams. And
I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I thought you would like it. Of course,
I absolutely like it.
Connection. So that's good.
Yeah.
And then
it's very good.
Yeah, I'm seeing Escape the Fate this evening, which
I'm
looking forward to
awesome.
Discussing in further detail.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, but Rocky's fun. We should just let that one play out.
Rocky's so fun. Like,
he's the nicest guy.
Oh my God, he's such the nicest guy.
I feel like there's a friend of mine, and part of his best man's speech at the wedding was, everybody likes Joe. And if somebody came to me and said, yeah, I don't really like Joe, he was like, I knew that person was a problem. It wasn't my friend.
Right.
It was like, I know that you're the issue in this.
Right.
So, and I feel like Rocky's one of those guys, just incredibly sincere, incredibly nice, incredibly kind and giving, clearly, mm-hmm. of his time and his skills. So it's a fun interview, and he's a lovely person to meet and speak with.
Yeah, he's just the coolest.
You say I am your everything, the half that makes you whole. You say you love me with all your heart, your body and your soul. You say your love is an ocean without any shore. You ask how much.
It's interesting listening to the record and the film that goes along with it. It's a very personal story that you're telling in so many of these songs. Was it difficult for you as a songwriter to go to that place to come up with these songs? Because it seems like you had to do some digging.
Well, Luke,
not to jump deep end.
No,
here,
that's fine. Yeah. No, it really wasn't, Luke. I think that a long time ago, I wrote a song with a fellow. Well, I wrote several songs, but the first time I met Richard Lee, who's in the Songwriter Hall of Fame, he wrote "Don't It Make My Brown Eyes Blue" and all kinds of great songs. He told me that he was going to China or Japan one time to do a tour, and he said he was thinking nobody was going to understand his music and his songs were so personal. And he said that it ended up going over really well because he felt like the more personal you make it, the more universal it is, because in some kind of weird way, we're all really going through the same sort of experiences, you know, mm-hmm. and being, I'm 143 years old. And since I'm so, yeah, I know I'm, as an old man, and I work with a lot of young talent and really wonderful people down here in North Carolina, if somehow or another, the potholes that I fell in and the things that I had to learn to swerve around, if I can help someone else not hit those potholes by just bearing my soul, then that's what I intend to do, if that makes any sense.
That makes a lot of sense. But if you, so not to be devil's advocate, but if you help them, but don't you feel that the potholes are also what makes some of those beautiful songs so beautiful and so relatable?
Oh, I do. I think that what hurts us ends up being most of the time the most beautiful things that we experience, you know?
So how do you, it's like being that mama bird, right? And so helping them not hit the potholes, but letting them hit enough potholes to still have that depth and experience to create that beauty.
Well, I think there's probably enough potholes to go around.
Well, you're right. I know. There's a pothole every time we take a step, right?
Exactly.
Did it scare you to share some of these songs? Did you ever think, oh, just write these and keep these for my family to hear? Or was this always, I have to share these with everyone? I can't, you know, set these aside.
I'm kind of always just writing for me. I'm not trying to heal the world or you know, play a football stadium. I'm just trying to do what's inside of me that feels like it needs to get out. And I guess I'm just not smart enough to keep it to myself. So I just put it out there anyway and see what people think.
It seems like it's got to be really good therapy to work some of this stuff out in 3 verses and a couple choruses and a bridge.
Well, between songwriting and my Harley Davidson, I've never had to go to a therapist. So I think I'm doing pretty good, you know?
Yeah, it's so interesting. Just that the thing, like you were saying, that kind of bearing one's soul and that vulnerability and letting these songs have that truth in them. It seems like both the hardest and the easiest thing to do as you were starting out in this career. Did you find that, or was it always just, I can't be anyone else. I've got to be me.
Yes. I guess to go back just a hair, when they came to me about the idea of trying to do a film about my life, Luke and Heidi, I thought that was the dumbest idea I'd ever heard in my whole life. I thought, why would anybody care or want to see that? And I don't know if you know much about the history or if you've had a chance to see the doc yet, but, I started my life at the Barium Springs Home for Children down in Troutman, North Carolina. I was found abandoned as a kid, but that's not a movie, you know, that's just a bad hand. I got dealt a bad hand, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I went through a, you know, pretty turbulent childhood, I guess, but that's not a movie either. That's just the card you got dealt. And then I went in the military right after high school, and I spent 6 years in the Army, 3 years active and 3 years in the reserve. And I was fortunate enough to be deployed in service of our country. That's not a movie either. That's just something I'm grateful and proud of. Those men pointing me in the right direction, helping me learn how to take care of myself. And then I moved to California, where I was going to be Eddie Van Halen. That was the only time I ever really had a goal. I thought I was going to get out of the Army and go be Eddie Van Halen, except taller and more handsome. That was my plan. And that didn't work out. So I went to Nashville and said, I'm going to be Tim McGraw. I'm currently shooting for Willie Nelson. That's what I'm thinking of now.
Yes. But, I mean, are we all?
Yeah, really.
But all of that really didn't make a movie, you know. And then they hired this company called 23andMe. And 23andMe, after all of that, found my father. They found my real father. And then guess what he did? He was a guitar player in a country band. He was a paratrooper in the 82nd Airborne. And to me, that felt like the opportunity for us to put a film together that's not about some old guy writing songs and still trying to make art, which is what I'm doing with my life. It was more about the hope, the desire to say, you know, whether you're starting a rickshaw company in Taiwan or you want to be a carpenter or a plumber, as long as you don't quit, you've always got a shot at it. And so for me, it was more of a way to encourage people to follow their hearts and their souls and their dreams than it was anything else.
Because watching the film, it's very touching. You know, I know you say it's not a 3X structure, the things that happen to you, but certainly when they are all laid out in this hour-long format, you really see the resilience of a soul and of a person sort of coming back from different things that happened to them. It sounds like the film was sort of done, was it done after the record or during, or what was that process? Because these songs, this particular batch, are so personal and are so, the film keeps weaving in and out of stories and connecting it to the song that accompanies it on the record.
It was done at the same time. And I think that probably influenced my songwriting a great deal as we were doing it, because, you know, as we were, you know, when we met my father, and so then he gave me, before he passed away, sadly, while we were filming the movie, but he gave me his only nice guitar. And so I wrote a song called My Father's Guitar on that guitar. So, and I'm really very transparent, and I usually just write about whatever I'm going through. So I think that that's why those songs ended up being so personal, because we were dealing with a lot of personal things that we were filming and shooting, and I was discovering parts of me. I mean, I went from my Thanksgiving before the movie was my wife and I and our children and sitting around a table with a meal we have, which is beautiful and wonderful. But now Thanksgiving is, we go to my dad's family's house, and there's nieces and nephews and oh, Uncle Rocky's here, and there's all these kids and all these people, and all of a sudden I've got a family. I'm somebody and I'm from somewhere. That never happened before.
What was that like for you? I mean, you said, as someone clearly in the twilight of the years, assuming it's just hydration for you is why you look so good. But so far into one's life, to suddenly have this whole discovery of, you know, you say in the film, the idea of a tree with branches, and suddenly discovering that all of this has happened around you. How, that must have really hit you hard, I'm assuming.
It was a tough decision for me when Susan and JC approached me and said, "We found your father. We're going to reach out to him." And I was very hesitant to do that, Luke, because I didn't want to mess up somebody's family. I didn't want to be the thing that shows up. And you know, he ended up having three daughters and a son and a family that he had for years. And the reason they were on 23andMe to begin with was his wife. When his wife was passing away, my father's wife was dying, she told my oldest sister, she said, "You probably have other siblings out there." That's where in that song I came up with, he called himself a rounder. That's how he described it. That he's, "I've been a rounder my whole life." And I guess that means whatever that means, right?
It's a great phrase. I mean, it is the perfect phrase.
Exactly. And for me, I didn't want to show up and ruin anything, but the absolute opposite happened. They embraced me, and now I have this family and this, I never saw that coming. I didn't expect that to happen. And I also didn't know how important it was, because I'd spent most of my life saying, "I don't need to know." I never thought about looking for my parents. It never occurred to me. I was more about trying to take care of the children that we have and the family that we have and the people with my charity. I always told myself it didn't really matter. But at the core of your being, I guess it does matter where you're from and who you are.
Oh, for sure. But I think you don't. I've had a lot of people in sort of kind of similar experiences to yours in my life. Some beautiful experiences, some horrific experiences, some in between. And you don't know until you're in it. until you're really in it, you really don't know how you feel about it.
I agree with you, Heidi. And I also think it's interesting in the way that you approach it with the world, because we could have made a really ugly movie.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
we could have talked about orphanages and foster homes and beatings and all kinds of stuff.
Of course.
But what good would that do? What good would that do in this world? And how does that help someone who's in that same place see the way out of it? Because right. There are lots of kids. There are some kids that I knew in the orphanage I can't find on Facebook or anywhere else. And maybe they didn't make it through that jungle. And if they didn't, then it's my responsibility as someone who did to help someone else get through it if I can.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a quote I always feel like I always use on this show, that Margaret Atwood saying, as an artist, as a writer, as a creator, the only person you need to apologize to are your children, because they did not ask to be born into somebody observing them going, there's something here we could focus in on, and maybe there's some truth in here we can talk about. How did your wife feel about all of this and this sort of, I mean, this is really upending in what turns out the best way possible, what your life was like?
Well, ever since I've known my wife, she would always say this sentence to me, and I don't think I've ever said it before, but she'd always say, I bet your parents were charging the hill on D-Day. Because I'm one of those people that no doesn't mean anything to me. No just means not now. And I'm not trying to be Garth Brooks, but I'm open to it. You know, and I'm still swinging for it. And yeah. Whatever happens, I'm going down singing. So she always thought there was some sort of fortitude or some sort of, she wanted to know way more than me. She's the one that signed me up for 23andMe and got that. And then come to find out, you know, my biological father was 15 years old. It was a horrible home life for him. And he went down to the recruiter's office and said, what do you got to do to join the army? And they said, well, you gotta be 18 and join the army. And this was back in the Korean War. So he said, I'm 18, I'll join. And he was only 15. And he got all the way to Korea before they found out he was 15 years old. And and thank God for the general I think he said his company commander came up to him and said, how old are you, son? And he said, he told him, but he said, please don't make me go home. And instead they made him the driver for the colonel. So he drove the colonel around during the Korean War, but he would have been in the infantry on the front line. And I think maybe that is a little bit of that gumption that my wife thought was inside me somewhere. And that's not me saying I have the fortitude that my father's did, because I don't. My adopted father is also a Korean War veteran. I'm not anywhere near that kind of person. But I hope at least the ability to stick through something comes through in my DNA.
You know, you mentioned that, you know, you're not aiming to be Garth Brooks, but you'll take it if it comes. One of the songs that is, I think, kind of one of the focal points of the record is the song More, that I think opens the album, correct?
Yes, sir, it does.
And throughout the film, people talk about it and say, like, oh, this would have been great for this person. This, what made you keep that in your back pocket for as long as you did?
Well, I've just always sung that song. I mean, at any point, had someone, some big star wanted to do it, I would have jumped at the chance for them to do it, you know, but those cards didn't fall my way. I'll never forget this. I used to be the band leader at this place down in Printer's Alley in Nashville, and all these great singers and songwriters would come through. And one of the songs that people would always come through there and sing is that song, Wind Beneath My Wings. You remember that song?
Mm-hmm.
And one day, Barbara, the lady who owned the club that I was the band leader at, she said, the fellow that wrote Wind Beneath My Wings is here. His name was Jeff. And he said, would you get him up and have him sing? And every person up to that point that had got up and sang that song always sang it with all of this vibrato and all this, like, do you ever know that you're my hero? It was that, right? And when I got up there, it was like the second or third set. So he had been there for a while. And he said, would you mind just doing that on the acoustic, just me and you? And I thought, well, why would he do that? I mean, we're going to make a big, you know, big firehouse production of it. Let me grab this guitar. I hope it's in tune. And so here's my dad's guitar, by the way. And
Oh, wow.
And so I didn't really know the song. And I, so I played the. That's how it goes. And I did the intro. And then when he went to sing, he went, "It must have been cold there in my shadow to never have sunlight on your face." It was, it wasn't about the mountains that he climbs. It was about the valleys that he got through. Everybody had the song wrong. It was about he had helped him get through the hard times and the rough times. And I think that spoke to me volumes about being personal about what you write and just letting it come from wherever that is in there, that it could be that way. If that makes any sense.
Oh, a whole lot of sense. Yes. You know, watching the film, listening to the record, hearing your story, why do you think, or how do you think it is that you have come out, you know, I feel like we talk a lot about on the show, this idea of sort of, I've gone through this so I can tell you that, you know, this idea of, mm-hmm. of an artist as someone, a character who has to go through these mazes and these journeys to be able to relay to an audience, here's what this feels like, here's what this is, and here's how you might take some of this information, here's how you might process it and deal with it. But throughout all of this, you are incredibly optimistic, upbeat, understanding, forgiving. Is that always been your mentality? Because I think you hear it in the songs, this ability to look back at difficult times and be forgiving and be understanding, which I don't think is the approach a lot of people would take.
I think I might have been, but it also might be that my perspective has kind of been from a different angle. My idea, I mean, When I was in high school, instead of working like at a lawn care place or fast food, I played in a band with a bunch of old men. I played with a bunch of people my age playing honky tonks and VFWs and, you know, whatever we could play. And to me, that was success because I was playing. And that's my whole goal, is to try to learn how to play guitar. Still to this day, that's all I want to do, is at some point try to figure that thing out and see if I can play it, you know. Mm-hmm. But then as we got moving through the world, it's interesting because in this series of interviews, I interviewed with a young man who's he lives in New York and he lives in a brownstone and he went to Stanford, and his first question to me was, well, how did it feel to you when the Universal recording deal was a failure? And that struck me, it kind of took me by surprise, because I never saw it as a failure at all. Before I had a record deal, I played honky tonks four sets, 7 nights a week. And now I play in a room where people are sitting and listening. And by any other measures than a guy that lives in a brownstone in Brooklyn, that's a success, right? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, and also I think that it really, it destroys your soul and hurts you if you hold things in. And I want to live my life like this, as opposed to like this. So I've always just, and if you're a kid that's in an orphanage, which they don't have orphanages anymore, but back at our foster homes, you learn how to forgive right away. Cause if you don't, you're just going to get beat up again.
Right.
You know, you got to let stuff go. And also realize those people are doing the best that they can too. Even if they're not doing very good, they're still doing the best they can. Cause if they could do better, they probably would.
It's so fascinating and such an optimistic, you know, is sort of outlook. And it's something that I think I for one look at it and go, man, that's, I wish I had that outlook on everything, you know.
Oh, I bet you do.
I don't know.
He's not so bad.
You haven't worked with Heidi for long, but
I mean, I think I'm closer to the outlook than you are, Luke, but you're getting
by
there.
By far, yeah.
we're pulling you. We're pulling you, Luke.
But as we kind of wrap up and let's get to the important questions. Why is North Carolina barbecue so much better than all other kinds of
So
barbecue?
good.
Well, I think it's because of the slaw, you
It is
know.
because of the
Oh.
slaw.
It's because the white slaw or the red slaw, you get a choice with it. And also, if you come spend any time here, and by the way, if you ever come by, my studio's open for you. Come in and sit down. Let me cook you a meal. I know where the best barbecue place in North Carolina is. I'll take you to it. No one down here is in a hurry. Nobody's in a hurry to do anything. My wife is from Brooklyn, and she worked for record labels for decades and decades, and she is always on a mission and got somewhere to go. But she moved here, and she's like, "What is wrong with these people?" I said, "They're not in a
Love
hurry."
it.
And if
That's
you want to make good barbecue, you got to take it slow, man. You got to take
amazing.
your time and let that stuff cook until it's ready. That's what I think.
My father's guitar laid silent in the closet of his home in Miller's Creek.
Rocky Lynn, Where I Belong, will be available to stream on Amazon Prime starting April 26th. That also happens to coincide with the release of his new album, Love, which is available wherever you get your music. For more information, you can find him online at rockylynn.com, and he's on Facebook, where he is at facebook.com/rockylynncountry.
You can check us out on all the various socials. Be sure to visit our website at rockandrollgradschool.com, and don't forget to leave us a review.
Today's show is produced by myself and Heidi Hegquist. Our reluctant producers are John Sauvay and Sandy Stone. Our willing producers are Rachel Allen and Randy Jeanette. Our intern is Zach Jackson. This one's for Philippe. Thank you, good night, and may all your favorite bands stay together.
I guess he was keeping it from me. It felt when he told me he'd always dreamed of Nashville, Tennessee.